Welcome to the BaseCS podcast, where we explore the basics of computer science concepts. I'm your host, Saran, founder of Code Newbie.
And I'm Vaidehi Joshi, author and developer.
And she's the brilliant mind behind the BaseCS blog series. Today, we're talking about
stacks and overflows in real life.
But first, we want to give a huge shout out to Twilio for sponsoring our first season of the BaseCS podcast. They set us up with our very own hotline, the BaseCS podcast hotline, and we've been using it all season for some awesome podcast challenges. For our latest challenge, we asked you to share with us real life examples where we might want to only insert at the beginning. Let's see how you did. So we've been talking about stacks and overflows and all that good stuff. And so for our final challenge for the BaseCS podcast, we wanted to know what are some other real life examples where we might want to only insert at the beginning. Only at the beginning. And I was a little worried about this, Vaidehi. I don't know how you felt, but I was a little concerned because I was like, is that too hard? Are people gonna have any ideas? What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I was a little bit worried when we said it because I was like, I don't think I can think of something aside from the example I already gave. So I would fail at this challenge. I was like, books, stacks of books. That's all I got, books.
All we got are books. Yeah. We actually got quite a few responses, so we're going to go through them right now. Okay. So the first response that we have reads, I used a data structure where you could only insert at one end in order to recreate the game Simon, since the new spot to remember is always added to the end. Also, backspace and undo functionality. Do you know the game Simon?
At first I thought it was like Simon Says. I don't know. We should look it up.
What is Simon? Simon the game.
Oh, I've seen this before.
This looks familiar. I don't think I've played it, though.
Is it the one where you have to do, like, there's, like, a sound and a light? So it's, like, it'll be, like, yellow, yellow, blue. Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
and then
like
you have to be, like, yellow, yellow, blue. And then it'll be, yes. Like, yellow, yellow, blue. Green, green,
yeah.
Red. Like, I think this is a terrible example. But, yes.
So that actually makes sense because, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so it has the four quadrants, and each quadrant has a color. So there's red, blue, yellow, I almost forgot what color that was called, yellow and green. And I remember this because I think it like lights up too or something. I'm pretty sure that you have to remember the combination. And so you're adding something at the end of the combination each time. And the combination obviously gets longer and more complicated. And it's like a memory game. That makes sense for the adding it at the end. Because yeah, you're never changing the pattern. You're just adding it at the end to make it more complex.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
That is a really good one.
Okay, the next one talks about...
Ooh.
Yeah, this one is history for a web browser. You'll probably want to limit the length of it. And if the most recent pages are at the end, then at some point it might just stop keeping track of pages you visit.
Yes, yes. We also talk about this in this episode, so good job.
Yeah, yeah, awesome. A third one says, real world stack examples, restocking milk at the grocery store.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. Huh. Tracking diff changes in an app for an undo feature. True, true, true.
Yes.
And they added, love the podcast, y'all. Keep it up.
Nice.
With a blue heart. I really appreciate the blue heart. It's a very nice touch. Yeah, good one. I like the combination of real world and technical ideas.
Restocking nice. Milk. That's so true.
Mm-hmm. Next one reads, an example of adding values at the beginning would be a waiting system, such as the DMV. Oh, yeah. When you arrive, you get a ticket and wait for your number to be called. Oh, that's a really good one.
Yeah, and that's actually a really well-known one. Like, CS courses will use it, except they'll do, like, a deli. But DMV is also really
good. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And honestly, I like going to delis more than DMVs. So I'm like, oh, my God, I really feel for the person in the DMV.
Yes.
But, yeah, same idea. I love it.
Yeah, so those are some pretty good ones. Did you have a favorite?
Man, I really like the milk restocking one.
I do too.
But I think it might just be because I like to buy milk.
Yeah.
So.
Milk is pretty good. Milk is pretty awesome. Yeah, I think I like the DMV one because I feel like that one probably actually exists, right? Like there is a ticketing system and, you know, I don't think I've ever thought of that as a – or just the DMV experience as a very technical – you know, space. Like, I don't think of the DMV and go, ooh, like, here's, I know exactly where code could fit into this world. But yeah, like, it's a nice reminder that technology is everywhere and code is everywhere. And, you know, they've been doing the stack thing this whole time and I never knew.
Yep, they're all around us. You just gotta know where to look.
Mm-hmm. Congrats to our podcast challenge winners. You'll be receiving a special postcard from Vaidehi. This season of BaseCS is brought to you by DevDiscuss. DevDiscuss is a show I work on with the team at Dev, an international supportive community for developers. The show addresses the many burning topics that pop up on Dev every day and is hosted by Jess Lee and Ben Halper, two of Dev's co-founders. Past episodes have included unpopular opinions with Kelsey Hightower, staff developer advocate at Google Cloud and a legendary voice in tech.
So an unpopular opinion should be like, computers were a mistake. Was was this all worth it?
And how changing your name is a difficult, unsolved, and sometimes personally devastating problem in tech.
I basically walk through this world, through this minefield of not knowing when I'm going to have this like sort of deep emotional wound reopened.
As well as how little known tools can have big productivity gains.
And I think it gives me the sense of structure, which I really enjoy. And also you can color code different things.
Each episode features interesting guests from diverse backgrounds who are active in the software space. This podcast is your place for burning tech questions, answers, and genuine conversations. And we also end each episode with commentary from the everyday developers who call Dev home.
You'd be surprised how many things making music and coding have in common.
True to the Dev community, DevDiscuss wouldn't be possible without the input from all of you. So listen, rate, and subscribe to DevDiscuss wherever you get your podcasts.
And the real life part is important because last episode we talked about what a stack is and we talked a little bit about the overflow part as well. And to sum it up, a stack is very similar to a linked list, but it has some additional rules and it is less strict with implementation and actually can be implemented with a linked list. And the biggest rule that we have when dealing with stacks is that you can only add to the top of the list. Is that right?
Yep. I like to think of the principle of LIFO, or LIFO, as you have now convinced me it might be called, which is that the last thing that goes in is the first thing that goes out. And if you can remember that, that is basically the golden rule of stacks.
Okay, so we spent a lot of time last episode talking about how to make them and how you can use arrays and apparently vectors and a bunch of other tools to make stacks. Do developers just spend all day making stacks? Is that a thing that I just missed out on and didn't get the memo about?
Well, yes, kind of, and no, kind of. In a way, we're all dealing with stacks as creators of technology and consumers of technology, but we're not really sitting there being like, stack new, stack pop, stack right. Push. Like, we're not usually doing that. I don't actually know anybody who's written a stack for their job. Or really for fun, either. Mm. But we interact with things that are kind of functionally stack structures, but we just don't necessarily realize that that's the case. But really under the hood, they're following those same rules and they're behaving the same way that a stack would.
Okay, like what?
Well, here's a good example. When I write my blog and I am in the process of like editing something and I may be writing and then I'm like, actually, let me undo that. I liked it before. And I'll go through these phases of like when I'm editing, undoing and redoing things a lot. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The process of undoing and redoing is really just pushing and popping states onto a stack. And when I say states, I mean like the state of my draft, the state of my article. So when I write a base CS post, for example, and I'm changing things, as I make changes, I'm basically tweaking my draft and taking those changes, creating a state of my draft, and pushing that onto the stack. And that's what lets me go and do like control Z and undo, and pop things off the stack. The stack being a stack of draft states of my blog post, and redo when I add things back onto the stack.
Huh. Interesting. Okay, what else? That's more of like the user experience of things, right? What are some other things I might encounter that are stackish?
Well, one great example is basically anytime you interact with your browser. Mm-hmm. So Mozilla has an entire browser history API, and they basically tell you if you're dealing with JavaScript or if you want to change things about the state of the browser and your history, there's actually something that is called the window.history object. And that entire object has these functions on it called push state, replace state, pop state. And if you remember from last episode, push and pop are pretty important functions and methods that are indicative of the behavior of a stack. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of guess, even if you've never looked at the history object or the browser history API, you can kind of guess how that might work, right?
Okay, so in that example, if I have this object, does it essentially take like a snapshot of the different states that I'm in? So that maybe if I visit a new website, it takes like another little snapshot and adds it to the top of my stack?
Totally. And that's exactly like when you have a single page web application, for example, or even just like, you know, a Rails application or a simple website. Your different URLs on that website are pretty important because they preserve the state of wherever that user was in their browser. And it's really important when you're dealing with, directing or redirecting or sending a user somewhere else, thinking about how you might impact their browser history. Because really what you're doing is based on the methods that you use and the way that you, you know, send them to a new URL, you're impacting this history of states that is their browser stack, their browser history stack, rather.
Interesting. Okay, so is there a more developer-focused example?
Yes, I think this is the one that might be the more scary one if any of us have kind of like encountered errors relating to this. And it's actually where Stack Overflow gets its name. This is the call stack. So the call stack is basically whenever anything happens in a program, anything at all, it has to somewhere end up on the call stack in order for it to run. So any kind of function you have, any type of method call, no matter how big or small, has to go on the call stack in some sort of order. And the order that it goes on the stack will, based on the very, very strict nature of stacks, tell us when it will get executed and what other things have to get executed first.
Interesting. Okay, so let's do an example of that. How might a call stack work or be created or, you know, the different methods, different things executed if I were running a program?
An example is a great idea. Let's just say we have a function and we'll call it function one. And function one does some stuff. Who even knows what it is, but it does some stuff. Probably it like creates some variables and then it does something to those variables. And then function one needs to rely on another function, which we'll call function two. And let's say function two probably also does some stuff and maybe has some more variables and maybe does some interesting things with them. Maybe it takes in a variable from function one. And then function two has a limit to what it can do. And then it needs to rely on another function, which we'll call function three. So let's just say in this example, we have one function that calls out to another one inside of it that in turn calls out to another one inside of it. So you have these three functions that are kind of within each other. And the way that they will actually end up on the stack has a lot to do with how they execute. So if I just told you that you have function one, which calls function two, which in turn calls function three, based on everything you know about how functions and methods in all languages work, what would you expect to go onto the stack first?
Okay, I would expect the very first function to be put on the stack first. Because we need that, right, to do anything else, like even know that we need the other functions.
Yeah, that's a really great point, actually. You don't even know you need the other functions,
right,
that they even exist, right? Like you don't even know that function two or three are a thing. Mm-hmm, you only know function two is a thing when you run function one in the first place.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're totally right. Function one ends up on the stack. What's interesting is when you put function one on the stack, you have a lot of different things that are actually going on. So I mentioned earlier, function one probably creates some variables, right? And maybe it does some things with those variables. And then at some point it's like, actually, I need function two. Mm-hmm. So when function one goes on the stack, the first thing that's going to happen is that there's going to be a chunk of memory that's going to be allocated for it. And this chunk of memory is where all those variables that it creates, that's where they're going to live. It's also going to be where all the arguments that it passes into function two, if there are any, They're going to live there in memory. And then another thing also happens, which is that function one, it calls out to function two, right? Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, function one has to return something, right? Every function has to return something.
Yeah.
So function one needs to have some sort of return address, because this is the thing that we're really concerning ourselves with when we call the function to begin with. So there's probably going to be some variables, probably some arguments, and a return address for function one.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that stuff, everything that has to exist in the world, in the universe of function one, all of that gets allocated in memory, and that whole section has a name, and it's called a stack frame. So you can kind of think of it as like one element on the stack with these little pieces inside of it. But then what happens when function one runs and then it's like, oh, I need function two? What do you think would happen at that point? Because function one is like, it's still running,
yeah,
but it's not done. And now we need to rely on someone else to help us.
Okay, so that's when it would call out to function two and say, hey, I'm going to give you some variables, some arguments, some stuff, and you need to kind of take over and do some things and give me back something. So I'm gonna guess that function two needs its own stack frame.
Yeah, totally. If you had to guess, would know exactly what's gonna be in there, right?
So okay, so in that example, it would have probably like its own variables, its own, you know, methods and stuff that it needs. But in it trying to execute that, it's going to realize, hey, wait a minute, I'm missing something. I need a third function, and it'll call out to that third function. And then as it kind of like hands it off to it, the third function gets added to the stack, and that is its own stack frame.
Totally. Really important is that each of these stack frames has to have its own return address.
Ah, yes.
If function two doesn't have its own return address, then when function three finishes one day, whenever that happens, then function two won't know what to do with it, right? Because it needs something to return when it gets removed.
Okay.
But that, yeah, you're exactly right. As each function is called, one function within another, you're basically adding stack frames to the call stack. In those stack frames are all the little things that need to exist for that function to run and execute.
Okay. I have the perfect metaphor.
All right.
And I literally just thought of this. Okay, are you ready?
Okay, I'm so ready.
Okay. You're at a restaurant, right? Mm-hmm. You're at a restaurant. You're sitting at a table and you say, hey, I want a burger. So you tell the waiter, right? You call the waiter, huh? Call, okay?
Uh-huh.
You call the waiter, yeah. The waiter comes to your table and your waiter's like, okay, what do you want? And you're like, I want a burger. The waiter writes it down and tries to give you a burger, but it's like, wait, I don't actually have the burger part.
Yeah.
I need to go somewhere. I need to call some, need to make another call. I need to get some help so I can actually give you the burger, right? So the waiter goes to the kitchen, right?
Yep.
And the waiter knows some information. It knows it wants a medium burger with cheese and bacon, right? It knows that.
Sounds really good. Oh my God.
It does. I'm hungry. I know. Yeah. And so the waiter hands those variables, that information over to the kitchen, which is the next stack frame.
Yep.
And in the kitchen, you have a chef, and the chef takes that order and says, okay, you need, you know, a burger. I'm going to help put that together. Okay, let's grill the beef. Do you grill the beef? Did I say that correctly? Yeah.
Sure.
You grill the beef.
That seems right.
Yes. Okay, great. So you do that, and then you get the bread, and then they're like, oh my God, I don't have the bacon. Obviously, the most important part. So everyone is on hold, right? Like, you're waiting for your food. The waiter is waiting at the window at the kitchen. The chef now has to go get the bacon, but the chef is like cooking. It's doing its own thing. So then it calls out to the errand boy or gal or whatever and says, hey, can you run to the store and get some bacon? So then the runner person goes to the store, gets the bacon, and has a return address, right? Because it knows to go back to the kitchen, hands the bacon off to the chef. The chef is like, oh my God, thank you. I can finally put this on the burger. Finishes the burger, has a return address, which is that little window to get it back to the waiter, hands it off to the waiter, and then the waiter brings the burger back to you so that you can eat it.
That is such a good metaphor.
Oh, yeah.
Also, it's like, you know, stacking the different ingredients on the burger also.
There you go.
Another good really
just stacks everywhere.
Great metaphor. But you know, okay, so like two questions for you. First, what on earth happens if the chef messes up and like, I don't know, had a bad day and is actually like errand person? Like they send them out for bacon and then they come back and then they're like, send them out for bacon. And then they come back and then they're just perpetually stuck going out for bacon because, and then, you know, the chef never gets the bacon.
Yeah. Oh, there'd be so much bacon everywhere, just like never being just never being resolved or returning in any place. Like it's just bacon galore. I feel like eventually the restaurant would explode with bacon.
Probably.
It would overflow with bacon.
Yeah. It would overflow because you're basically like you're never ever resolving that whole stack of things that are, you know, and actually what you're doing is you're just adding more stuff to the stack.
Right.
And everybody's on hold waiting. And at some point, there's just no more space.
There's no room on the bun. There's no room in the kitchen. There's just too much bacon, which is something I never thought I'd say, by the way. But
in this scenario,
too much bacon.
Yeah. It's too much. My second question for you is as the errand person comes back and then they give it to the chef, and then as each thing proceeds to go back to the point where I get my burger.
Yeah.
In our metaphor, what happens to the errand boy or the chef after – you know, the burger goes from one person to the other?
Great question, Vaidehi. So the errand person is done. We're like, okay, we don't need you anymore. The only thing you have to do today, that's really very low business having restaurant, is we just need this one piece of bacon so you can go back home. So the errand person just goes home. And then the chef, once it puts together its burger, is like, my only job today was to put together this one burger. I'm done. I'm out of here. Exits.
Gone.
They don't get a lot of customers. You just have the one a day. That's as much as they can handle, just one burger a day.
Must be one heck of a burger, man.
Right. Yo, it takes the whole day. It takes the whole day to put together.
Some artisanal bacon. Come on.
and the chef is like, I'm done. I go home. And then the waiter's like, oh, thank God. I've been here like 20 minutes already. And then the waiter returns with the burger. And then once it returns, it's done. And the restaurant, we just don't need it anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. That's kind of a key thing, right? Where as each person in this very strange procedure is no longer needed, they're kind of just gone from this universe. Until they need to be called back again, in which case they could come back. But for the purposes of my one burger, as soon as that errand person is done with their errand, they don't exist. They're done. Like their return address has been passed back to the chef and they're gone and all the things having to do with them are gone and we don't care. End of story.
Thanks for the burger though. It's really good. Okay. So in our very amazing example of the burger restaurant, the one burger restaurant, it's potential stack level too deep scenario is too much bacon, right? Like we've literally run out of physical room for this bacon, therefore the restaurant explodes. What is that too deep level when it comes to our code? Like what does it mean for something to be too deep? Is there a number associated with that, or like what is that?
There might be a number associated with it depending on the language. I'm not sure of what – I don't think there's like a universal number of like 75 stacks is too many stacks, but 74 is fine. but basically what you can do is you can look at a stack trace if you ever encounter like a stack level too deep or stack overflow error. And at that point, you can kind of see what was the level where things blew up. And usually what will happen is that you've probably – ended up in a situation where you were making a recursive call. And sometimes, like a lot of the times that it's happened to me is I have ended up in like an infinite loop of calls. So it's not even that there was a number. It would have kept going. And at some point, my program was like, look, this is just going to keep going. I have to, I'm going to make an executive decision that we do not need any more bacon. We're shutting down.
Yeah.
So it's possible the bacon could have just kept coming.
What is an example of code that might cause a stack overflow error? Like we mentioned recursion at some point. What's a sample code of that? Like what might that actually look like?
Well, say you have a fetch bacon function and
– what a great function.
And inside of it, you're like going to have like maybe a variable that's like is bacon fetched or something. Mm-hmm. But maybe you made a mistake in how you named it, and then you just called it like fetch bacon, and your program will be inside of fetch bacon, and then it'll be like, oh my gosh, I need a method called fetch bacon. And then it's going to call fetch bacon again, but then fetch bacon.
It's calling itself.
Yeah. Yeah. It's calling itself because it doesn't know, like maybe you accidentally meant to say, hey, create a variable, but maybe you messed up and you had a typo and you accidentally actually called the method itself. So now it's creating a new stack frame. And then inside of that stack frame, it's like, oh, wait, I need a method called fetch bacon. And then it's just going to keep adding stack frames.
Yeah.
And then just because of a little mistake in your code or maybe because you named something incorrectly, you could end up in a stack overflow situation.
Ooh. Yeah, so you're just stuck in a loop.
Yeah.
You just keep talking to yourself and trying to get yourself to fetch more bacon for yourself. And that doesn't really work.
Yeah. It's you're basically like creating the errand person situation in that example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very interesting. Okay, so be careful with your fetch bacon functions. Is
for
the
real.
Lesson here.
It sounds really good in theory, yeah. But like in practice,
it's a terrible idea.
Do you want that much bacon all over your house? Probably not.
No, you don't.
Too greasy. Too greasy.
You know, I really can't think of a better way to end the season than with a fetch bacon method. I really can't. I'm really proud that we were able to get to this point. This is very impressive. I'm proud of us.
Yeah. I mean, if you had told me that that's where we would have started with binary, yeah. with bacon, ending with bacon, I wouldn't have believed it. But it's very, you know, poetic.
You know what, though? That first episode, we talked about how there's the three Bs, right? Binary, bytes, and bits.
We
and now we
lying.
Have a fourth B.
It's four. There's four of them. Now you know. You have to listen through the whole series to know that, though.
Yeah.
It's like the Easter egg.
You have to re-listen to season one to put all that together. So that is our last episode of this season of the BaseCS podcast, season one. We'll be back in 2018 with a brand new season. Until then, you'll probably enjoy another BaseCS project that Vaidehi's working on. Vaidehi, want to tell us about it?
Yeah. So I am super, super excited to be able to share the fact that I have been working on bringing BaseCS to life in the form of videos.
Ooh.
And it's something that I really wanted to do for a while. And I'm really excited to be collaborating with the practical developer team on this. I just took a look at some of the videos. They look really good. And it's really exciting because if you have been listening to the BaseCS podcast or reading the series and have wanted to have somebody kind of explain and talk through the posts or see some visuals to help supplement the things you've learned on the podcast, this is a great opportunity to do that. And you also get to see me draw live.
Ooh.
Which could go well.
And
or
you're
not.
Really good at drawing. Yeah, no, you're really good at drawing. So I'm really excited about this. Yeah, that's like the one thing that, you know, kind of sucks about the podcast format is they don't get to see your awesome diagrams and pictures and your really, really helpful sketches. So they get to see that in action.
Yeah.
On
so
video. That's really exciting.
Hopefully that'll really help if you have had any questions throughout the podcast. And look out for that in January, early January of next year, 2018.
Very cool. So if you've enjoyed the show, let us know. Leave us a review. And to learn more about stacks and overflows, make sure to check out Vaidehi's blog post. Link is in the show notes. Also, make sure to take a listen to the Dev Discuss podcast that I helped make. It's the first original podcast from Dev, a global community of software developers of all backgrounds and experience levels. And the show covers burning topics that impact the daily lives of programmers and beyond. Hosted by Dev co-founders Ben Halpern and Jess Lee. Vaidehi, you want to say goodbye?
Bye, everyone.
Thanks for listening. See you next year.
Aww.
That was kind of sad, wasn't it?
I am sad.
That's really sad.
It's so good, but I'm a little sad.
Yeah.